The debate has been quite heated recently over global warming, no pun intended. The founder of the Weather Channel has said climate change is a hoax, and he's critical of the media for fostering what he thinks is a scam. Meanwhile, scientists with the IPCC are still sounding the alarm, saying that a warmer climate could mean the extinction of some species. Global warming from both sides coming up here on Jet Streaming. I'm Kathy Werzer, and this is Jet Streaming, one of the few podcasts of its kind on the internet devoted to all things weather and climate related. With me, as always, Minnesota Public Radio meteorologist Paul Huttner and the former head of the Twin Cities National Weather Service Office, Craig Edwards, is with us, too. Nice to be back with you, too.
Great to be here. Waiting for the snow. Where is it?
Where's my snowflakes?
Well, if you just hang on, it's going to come. They're going to come sooner or later. A lot of things happened while I was gone last week. Some of it centered on global warming. See that the latest IPCC report was released, and it says that as early as 2020, millions and millions of people in Africa will suffer through water shortages. Asia's megacities are at a great risk for river and coastal flooding. And we in North America will get longer and hotter heat waves. What did you guys think of this latest IPCC information?
It's pretty startling, the information that comes out. And the quote that jumped out at me here is, warming of the climate system is unequivocal, as is now evident from observations and increases in global average air and ocean temperatures, widespread melting of snow and ice, rising global average sea level. So, you know, the IPCC, they started off rather cautious. Some critics even saying they're not alarmist enough, and now they're saying warming unequivocal. So that was a headline.
Well, Kathy, I think the debate is over about the observed climate change, the temperatures warming. Those are clear observations. The debate still remains about how much human impact is adding to that acceleration of global warming. So it'd be interesting to peel back the layers of that and find out the true impact that human activity is adding to global warming.
Well, someone who disagrees with a lot of what's being said about global warming is John Coleman. Folks in the weather business know John as the founder of the Weather Channel. Various blogs, as you all know, are buzzing about his recent comments that global warming is a manufactured crisis and a scam. John Coleman is currently a forecaster at KUSI in San Diego, California, and he joins us on Jet Streaming.
Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. Paul Huttner here. Look, at the risk of throwing you a softball right out of the gate here, most of our listeners may not know that you actually helped found the Weather Channel. All right. I've heard stories talking with my colleague, Tom Skilling, somebody you know well in Chicago, that you flew around the country for 3 years trying to convince people that the Weather Channel was a good idea. And I, of course, have a tremendous amount of respect for you having developed that. Tell us what it was like getting that whole project going. And did you run into a lot of skeptics?
I was laughed at coast to coast. It wasn't 3 years, it was four. I only needed $14 million to found the channel. I had developed the business plan. I'd put everything together. And it seemed to me it was an obvious success. But to anybody with money, it was the biggest joke that ever come in the door. I was turned down by ABC, CBS, NBC, by Paramount, Disney, by every venture capitalist on the face of the earth. And I wasn't just turned down. I was scoffed at. Most people refused to talk to me. I went to every major group broadcaster in the United States, including the great Hubbard family in the Twin Cities. Nobody was interested in what I had to say.
Amazing.
And I finally found people who would put up the money, but it was perfectly clear from the beginning they weren't nice people. But it had been 4 years, and they said to me, yeah, you've got a great idea. We're going to do it. And if you don't sign a deal with us to do it our way, we won't do it at all. So, and we'll do it without you.
Well, look at where we've come, John. This is Craig Edwards. 25 years later, look at what the Weather Channel has become. I congratulate you for that. I got to tell you, John, growing up in Chicago in the Fox River Valley, you were my boyhood hero. I wanted to be John, not the kid that wanted to be like Michael Jordan. But I remember you hitting that snowstorm. That Chicagoland snowstorm that paralyzed the city in the 60s, and you did weather on the fringe. I thought you were out of the box, and I really enjoyed your visionary and your the way you did weather that was not only entertaining but also informative. So I want to thank you for that. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about what your idea is on this IPCC report that's sort of been very cautious, but now they're sort of ratcheting it up a little bit. What particular issue concerns you that this may be a little bit fabricated or it may be a little bit too over-alarming?
I think the science is horrible. I can't find a single link between any warming that may have occurred on Earth and the activities of mankind, except for such things as the urban heat island. But the concepts behind this report, particularly their total reliance on carbon dioxide as the warming element, has been totally unproven, and in fact, I find it totally invalid. I can't find any evidence that supports it at all. There's no question that mankind, we have built an incredible society powered by fossil fuels. Those fossil fuels generate all our electricity. They power all our transportation. They make the lights burn, the computers work, the cars go. And they do produce tons of carbon dioxide that goes into the atmosphere. But carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. It's a trace element. It has been in the atmosphere on a natural basis forever and ever. And even what we have generated that has gone into the atmosphere by fossil fuels has increased from, let's say, 217 parts per million before fossil fuels to maybe 530 parts per million now. That means that 54 out of every 100,000 molecules in the atmosphere are carbon dioxide. It's still a trace element. And even with so-called forcing, where it has more impact than its actual content, I can't find a link that says that it has caused any warming. And when you chart the temperatures of planet Earth based on the ice core data and the thermometer readings in recent years, and plot the sun cycles, they link up together. But then you plot the man's use of fossil fuels on the same chart. There's absolutely no connection between the fossil fuels and the temperature.
But, John, the AMS, the American Geophysical Union, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, you know, as you know, they've all issued statements in recent years concluding that the evidence for human modification of climate is compelling. So aren't you kind of swimming upstream on this?
I absolutely am. I'm a voice in the wilderness. And I know that. And that's why I call it the biggest scam in history, because everyone's piled aboard. There's no question about it that this committee formed by the United Nations for the purpose of finding human climate change is going to find human climate change. If you form a committee, it's going to find what it's supposed to find. Otherwise, its existence is irrelevant. And I'm afraid that's exactly what's happened, and I'm afraid bad science has been encouraged by it, because if you do bad science, you get rewarded, and it seems to me that's exactly what's happened. I can't find a single study, and I have searched and dug and read, that I find is really significant evidence that man's activities have caused global warming. I just can't find it.
John, looking at the geologic record, let's talk specifics about CO2. If you go back hundreds of thousands, in some cases even millions of years, there is a clear link between increased atmospheric CO2 and increased temperatures.
Not that I find anywhere. If you're saying that CO2 caused the medieval warm period, I don't think so.
Well, that was a regional effect. I'm talking about globally. If you go back through globally, you're seeing a strong correlation.
Well, let's talk about global temperatures. Please tell me where you get global temperatures over the millenniums.
There are a number of different things that have been done. Ice cores.
You're going to use the ice cores.
Ice cores, tree rings, ancient lake sediments.
Obviously, ice cores only occur in frozen areas, so that's not global. Tree rings only occur in the forest. And I must say that the way the tree rings have been analyzed is you find some very significant studies that show that the tree ring analysis is an error. And so I can't buy that. I just
well, I guess it. What I don't see, and I hear what you're saying, but what I don't see is I don't see the science on the other side. And I don't think...
Well, have you looked for it? That's the question.
Of course.
Most people I don't think do.
Can you
most,
cite
most
some
people,
articles for
most
folks?
People accept and don't look to the other side. If you will start by going to people such as Roy Spencer or Steve McIntyre, who are real scientists, and go through the research that they have linked to, you can find some fairly significant studies.
Well, I think that, John, you raise a good point. And there, we talked amongst ourselves about is real people that are educated people can still continue to debate the cause of climate change.
And let's also discuss the extent. I don't find anything going on currently that is unprecedented, that is frightening, that is irreversible, and all of those words are being thrown around.
So
what I find is a huge piling on by scientists, environmentalists, politicians, and the media, and I never saw anything like it, and I find it's a real distortion of science.
Well, as recent climatological records indicate, with 100 years, let's just say we have a 100-year snapshot, and we're showing that perhaps the last 20 years that we've had 12 of the warmest years on record. Is that not valid?
No, that's not true at all. If you look at the revised NASA data, and it was found that NASA had fudged this data, and it was corrected very quietly about 8 months ago, their list of the 10 warmest years in history, in the United States at least, shows that only one of those years has been since 2000. Two of them occurred in the 1990s, and three of them occurred in the 1930s. And the other two were scattered. So in the United States, where we have fairly decent temperature data, the warmest decade was the 1930s.
John, do you think that the scientists on the IPCC who have a similar opinion such as you are being muffled or stifled?
Oh, yes. And if you go to icecap.us and look at the list of experts, you will find, I think it's four former members of the IPCC who have just given up because when they did peer reviews that were anything but supportive, they were ignored.
So are you
none of their counter studies were included. Clearly, it's fixed science, and it's really sad. I see it as runaway science.
Are you saying then that the hundreds of meteorologists and climatologists and scientists that remain on IPCC that are still signing on to this report are going along, particularly for the research funding? And
well, some of them are.
Okay.
Some of them are. Some of them I think truly believe in what they're doing, have accepted it, haven't looked with enough skepticism in my mind at it, haven't studied hard enough, and want to buy into it. But I think there is a huge prejudice toward buying into it because it is you get the awards, you get to go to the meetings, you get the funding, you get the promotions, and going against the grain is very uncomfortable. And I'm afraid that it has, I think it's overwhelmed us. Yeah, I really do.
John, how much of this is a political issue for you?
None of it. I'm apolitical, and global warming isn't about politics or environmentalism. It's not something you believe in. It's not a religion. It's science, and it's the science of meteorology. And that's my only interest. And I don't, whenever you're skeptical, they say, well, you must be funded by the oil companies. Well, I'm not funded by anybody. I'm just a guy
John,
who stuck his neck out and has caused a stir.
Are you saying that you believe the planet is warming or you believe it isn't warming? Or are you just saying there's no human life?
We've just completed an 11-year warm solar cycle. And I think to deny the solar cycles is to not look at the basic physics. All energy comes from the sun. So the sun, despite what we were taught in junior high, the sun isn't a constant. The sun does vary. There are cycles. Rhodes Fairbridge, the famous astronomer from Columbia shortly before he died, I thought came out with a fascinating study that I would really like to see others pick up on, where he says that we've tried to understand why these sun cycles are the way they are, that we ought to be looking at the orbits of the major planets because they seem to have an impact on how the sun dispenses its heat, radiates it, kind of create a directional effect from the sun via their orbits. And we ought to be looking at this. But in any case, if you looked at any plot of sun energy received on Earth, you find it varies over cycles, and 11 years is the dominant cycle. And if you plot that with temperatures of Earth from whatever sources you find a good correlation. And the last decade, we have been at we have just peaked through a solar cycle, and that peaks very well. But the last 2 years, we've passed the peak, and we've gone on the cooling side. In the last 2 years, I see a slight cooling around the Earth. You know, yep. They've just gone through the worst winter in at least 50 years in South America, and they're just screaming. It's still bitterly cold in Argentina and Peru. It should be their spring, and the winter's lingering. We are not, at this moment, warm at all.
I just sat through a presentation here at the University of Minnesota from Dr. Kerry Emanuel from MIT within the last few weeks here. And he's showed a graph, which I thought was quite illuminating, that charted out all the possible net warming and cooling effects for the atmosphere, including the solar cycle, and including some of the particulates that actually cause the atmosphere to cool. And the amount of greenhouse gas effect was multiple times beyond what the increase in solar cycle would be.
I haven't seen his chart. Would you email it to me?
I will. I'll get
I'd
a hold
like
of that.
I'd like to have it because it would be very interesting for me to look at because I've seen charts that counter that, and I'd be happy to email you some.
That'd be terrific. Would you say then that we should expect a cooling, an observable cooling in the next, what, decade?
Yes. Yes, I think we are definitely going to be going into a cooling trend in the next decade. And, you know, I think in 20 years it will be obvious that one of us was on target and one of us was wrong. And I expect to be right. But
we all do. We're meteorologists.
John, we expect you to be around by then, too.
I do also believe the ship has sailed that I am one of the few voices on the other side.
Well, time tells everything, John.
Can you tell us where we can reach you 20 years from now, John?
Yeah.
I assume you'll still be in
San
Diego.
I'll leave a forwarding address.
Okay, sounds good. All right.
John Colbin, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thanks, John.
Well, now for the other side of the global warming story, we've called on Professor Brian Schumann. He was with the University of Minnesota studying climate change. He's now with the University of Wyoming. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Pretty well. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Generally, what do you make of John Coleman's comments?
Well, I guess I feel that they're unfortunate to some degree as I've been listening lately to skepticism about the whole issue of global climate change. I feel like it's the equivalent of someone arguing against a pretty strong scientific basis. It sounds a lot like going back and looking at people saying that plate tectonics weren't real, or even saying that things like evolution are not real. There's a pretty good, pretty sound scientific basis for these positions, and now a lot of the positions against it sound very ideological.
Brian, Paul Huttner here. I'm looking at the latest IPCC report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and a couple of things jump out here. One of them, of course, highlighting what we've known already, but 11 of the past 12 years are among the 12 warmest years in the instrumental record of global surface temperatures. Carbon dioxide levels now higher than at any time in the past 650,000 years. And they're talking about the oceans and their ability to absorb that CO2, that may not be as much of a sink, a carbon sink in the future, because it's turning more acidic and losing its ability to absorb some of that CO2. That may increase the rate of our temperature rise on the planet. What is your take on CO2 specifically, and have you had a chance to look at the latest IPCC report?
I have looked at the latest report, and I think it's very interesting. And you know, as a geologist, I think the whole issue of CO2 is one that geologists have been familiar with for a long time. It's a big part of understanding Earth's history. Even if you go back all the way to the very earliest portions of Earth's history, billions of years ago, it's clear that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was a very important component to shaping what Earth's climate was like. In fact, had there not been very much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, there would have been a very long period of time when Earth would have been totally frozen over. That's because early in Earth history, there was much less solar energy reaching the Earth, and it would have been too cold to actually exist the way the rock record shows us that it did. More recently in time, like back during the time period when dinosaurs roamed the Earth, it's clear that the world was much warmer than today. It's also clear that there was a lot more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than today. So, you know, on a wide range of scales, looking at the history of the Earth, we can see that carbon dioxide has played a really important role. I guess the thing that's scary now is that it's true. If you look at the record over the last 650,000 years, carbon dioxide levels have never been as high as they are today. And, in fact, you have to go back almost 40 million years to get to the time period when there was as much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as we expect to have by the end of this century. The problem is, if we are releasing all this carbon dioxide in a very short period of time, it's bound to have a very dramatic effect. It naturally comes and goes over very long, slow time periods due to natural processes, but what we're doing is really releasing a big pulse of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere all at once. And just looking at the record, it seems like when you have a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, you can expect the climate to change. And fundamentally, I think this is the issue that skeptics have not really grappled with, which is if we are increasing the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as much as we have, how would that not change the climate? And the geologic record is full of examples of where carbon dioxide has gone up, and it really has had a big effect on our climate.
Yeah, this is meteorologist Craig Edwards. I want to remind our listeners that the IPCC has been very cautious on delivering this information. They've go back to 1990. Hundreds of lead scientists have been studying this issue. And they all of a sudden, we get to 2006, 2007. These reports now seem to be a little bit more alarming. And I think I saw one quote in there about the next 3 to 5 years would be very much defining the climate change, particularly in the northern hemisphere. Now, the people in the southern latitudes, it may not be a big deal, but as we get to 40 degrees north and beyond, we start seeing dramatic climate changes that, us humans perhaps can adapt to. But how do you see nature and the ecology being able to adapt if there is a rapid climate change?
I think that's a really good question. And I'd like to agree with your first comment there that it's really true that sometimes the IPCC gets portrayed as this environmentally oriented group. But it's true, if you look back at its history of various reports that have come out over the last 15 years, they started off very equivocal. It was back in the 90s, it was not clear at all that there was a human impact on Earth's climate. But as more and more data has become available, it's become very clear that there is an impact. But in terms of what the effects will be on things like ecosystems, and one of the big things I'm interested in is water supply, I think there's a big risk that a lot of things will change. One of the ways I like to think about it is, the expectations are that by the end of the century, Minnesota might be about as warm as Kansas. And, of course, people live in Kansas, so people in Minnesota could adapt to that new climate. The problem is that the forests that live in Minnesota, that grow in Minnesota, don't grow in Kansas, and they're not going to be able to tolerate those much warmer conditions. Also, it's much drier in Kansas. There's, places in Kansas where reservoirs of water that people depend on have a very hard time staying full of water because there's a lot more evaporation. So you apply that climate then to Minnesota, you could expect that it could have a big impact on Minnesota's lakes and other water supplies. The thing, as a geologist, that I find alarming is that I've looked at the fossil record, and you go back to past periods of time where climate has changed fairly rapidly. And any time that the climate has warmed by more than about 3 degrees, there have been very dramatic shifts in the types of plants and animals that occur in any given place. And so, the types of forests that grow in one place will be rapidly replaced by something totally different. And, a 3-degree warming is a pretty likely outcome for what we're talking about in the next century. That makes me think we could really experience big changes.
So we could see then some species just totally obliterated in a sense?
Well, there's certainly the risk that you'll have some extinctions. I think the bigger risk is that you would just have massive areas of forest dieback, or massive areas where agricultural production is going to have to be adjusted. And it will take a while to sort of regrow those forests or to adjust to the appropriate type of agriculture to apply in a given place. I don't think it's necessarily the case that we're going to be talking about extinctions, although that seems to be part of the story. I think more broadly, though, we're just talking about a wide-scale change in what's there. Actually, this is already beginning to happen out here in the West. There are large areas in the Rocky Mountains right now where there have been unexpected insect outbreaks that have killed off huge areas of forest. It's really dramatic as you drive from here in Wyoming down into Colorado. You just see these mountainsides that are entirely red, where there used to be just green conifer trees. It's all now just standing dead red trees because the warmer conditions have allowed these insects to really grow like crazy. They have big populations, and they've just eaten a lot of the forest.
Brian, I spent 9 years in Arizona and witnessed that firsthand with the insect infestation followed by fires, decade of fires that just wipe out the world's largest ponderosa pine forest. You know, we know we can't say that any one given event is a result of climate change. But when you start to look at a decade of forest fires, when you start to look at the kind of fires we've seen out in San Diego and Los Angeles becoming seemingly more numerous and more devastating with fire behavior that the fire people say they have not seen in their lifetimes, and this whole process starts to wipe out large tracts of forest, can we say that we are seeing the effects of climate change right before our eyes?
I guess that's the way I've been thinking about it. I mean, a lot of these events, certainly with the forest fires, seem completely unprecedented historically. And we know that we're experiencing these really unusually warm years. I mean, these are probably not just the warmest years of the last century, but the warmest years of the last 1,000 years. And so, in that context, if this warmth is what's driving the fires and the insect outbreaks, which seems to be the case, then I would say that, yes, we're beginning to see the effects ecologically.
Well, I think one of the things that's failed to come across in these reports to us regular folks is the cascading impact that can happen once things start to happen and how you put something in motion like this with climate change and how you start to put things into place that perhaps can limit your CO2 emissions, that it's going to take a long time to recover from that. So what's your optimistic outlook for climate change as we try to turn toward how do we get ourselves out of this mess?
Well, can we be optimistic?
Is there anything to be optimistic about other than it's going to be warmer winters in Minnesota? And for some of that's optimistic. For others, it's pessimistic.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think we just have to realize that we're going to face changes that are going to continue. If you look at the IPCC report, for example, they point out that even if we held carbon dioxide levels at what they are today, we would experience a fair amount of warming continuing over the next century just because the world is still adjusting to those higher CO2 levels. And so, I mean, the most optimistic case is that somehow very little changes, but it's still going to change. I guess the way I've been sort of hoping for this to happen is that it seems like there's been a groundswell of recognition of something going on now. And maybe this will be a turning of the tide where we start to address this issue. And if we address it sooner rather than later, then we're talking about a smaller change rather than a very large, dramatic change that will affect many, many different things. And so my most optimistic view is that we'll begin to address it that doesn't mean things will not continue to change, but they won't change as dramatically, and we'll then be able to adapt more readily to it.
You know, I want to go back. I want to finish by going back to John Coleman's comments. And other meteorologists, and you guys know this, have been outspoken in their views on climate change. I'm thinking about one forecaster in the Midwest recently who was critical of former Vice President Al Gore and his advocacy, and that forecaster was roundly criticized. And the question here is there room for diverging opinions in the scientific community on this particular issue?
Well, I mean, an important way to look at this is that the scientific community, as we mentioned earlier, the scientific community started off very equivocal. It was unsure that this was happening. And it's like any sort of change in scientific thinking. More and more data has come together to say that there really is something going on here. This is not necessarily a question of freedom of speech. There's lots of room for debate about how we address this issue. But in terms of the basic sort of facts of the matter, there's been hard scientific work over several decades now really seriously looking at this. And to just have a few people dismiss it out of hand as though all those people don't know what they're talking about seems to me to be pretty off base. This is like saying, well, I went and talked to a doctor and he said I have cancer, but, you know, I read an article that cancer is really a sham, so I'm not really going to believe him. I mean, I think that that's really, to some degree, the way we have to think about this whole issue.
And let me agree with Brian on this note that how we do science is, when you make an assertion, you bring your evidence to the table. If somebody comes forward with a compelling study or evidence that says either the Earth is not getting warmer or this anthropogenic or human link is tenuous, and here's the reason why, scientists are going to look at that and they're going to adapt. That's how science evolves. But in this case, it's the overwhelming evidence is that the planet is getting warmer. We're seeing all these documentable, observable effects. And the link between human modification of the climate gets stronger with each year, each study that comes out. So there just isn't a whole lot of science on the other side of this debate right now.
That's right. I think you're right. It really is a good point that if someone came forward right now with a study that said that this really was not happening, a lot of people would pay serious attention to that. And the way the scientific process works is that scientists are almost inherently skeptical. Anything that comes forward that's new, people attack and try to figure out all the problems with it. And that's what's been happening with this global change idea for several decades now. And really, it's gotten to the point where every little hole that people have tried to punch into it have been, you know, evaluated and looked at in a different way. And the final conclusion still then is that things are warming and that human impact is really an important driver of that.
Good conversation. Brian Schumann, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. Brian Schumann is a professor at the University of Wyoming. And feel free, by the way, to tell us what you think of what you heard. You can send us a message by going to the Jet Streaming Podcast at minnesotapublicradio.org. I'm not a meteorologist. You guys are. You're a synoptic meteorologist, as a matter of fact, not climatologist, but obviously, you're with Dr. Schumann on this?
Well, I tell you, Kathy, I've been in Minnesota for 15 years. I've experienced. How can you not deny what you've seen? So to see it with your own eyes occurring in front of you is hard to disprove that there isn't something going on.
Yeah, and, you know, just the news comes out. It's always another record, always another thing. The Arctic sea ice, a record low this September since observations began in 1979. And not just a little bit. I mean, less than 50% of what it was. And they're talking about, if this trend continues at this rate, ice-free summers in the Arctic maybe by 2050 in our lifetimes.
Again, if you're listening, tell us what you think by going to minnesotapublicradio.org and drop us a line by going to the Jet Streaming Podcast. Just enough time, friends, for Weather Website of the Week. Mr. Edwards.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're talking about climate change, and anybody can go Google climate change. But I found a site yesterday that I think is sort of neutral, and it's called nature.org. And you can read about the science, you can read about the reports, but you can also learn ways to maybe help remedy this situation that we got ourselves into. And I think that's the important thing. Move off the topic of discussion about the issue and look for a remedy, look for places we can respond to, and I think nature.org might be a place to start.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
Appreciate it. And that is it for Jet Streaming, produced by Minnesota Public Radio. Next week, more from the ever-changing world of weather. It's always interesting, isn't it? Until then, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.
Keep on the sunny side.